enjoy digitally composed and or remixed music? Love a variety of musical styles? Look no further than LapFoxTracks.com. Over a dozen different composers with individual stylings. Well affordable, high quality musical tracks with much more bass than what is technically possible for this podcast promo. Check out LapFoxTracks.com.
From around the globe, this is Web Fiction World.
And welcome to the 11th episode of Web Fiction World. My name is Anna Hart. I'm here to induct you into the dangerous, dark world of online fiction. Once again, MCM is not here. Sadly, his absence is now permanent. He accidentally turned himself into a penguin. There was an accident involving an egg, a power surge, iced tea in a microwave oven. So he's not able to be my co-host any longer. But I found myself a brand new co-host in the shape of Greg X. Graves, author of Codex Necromantia and A Guide to Moral Living in Examples. Greg, introduce yourself in 10 words.
10 words sounds like too many. My name is Greg X. Graves, and I'm a microwave salesman. I incidentally sold MCM, the one that turned him into a penguin. There's absolutely no connection between his disappearance and my appearance on the show. And I'm really looking forward to my first time here. I've listened to some of the other podcasts, and it sounds really great.
That was a really long 10 words, but okay.
Fit them in where I can.
last time we looked at flash fiction, yep. How writing short stories compares to serials, why you should give it a try, the different writing communities. So if you're long word countedly challenged, you should give it a listen. This week we're going to look at zombie fiction. No, not fiction about zombies, but looking at stories that have died or been abandoned and how to bring them back to life. We'll also have a reading, and if you didn't know that by now, you haven't been listening to the other shows, and I don't even really want to speak to you. But before we get to all that, I'd like to introduce today's guest. Here with us today is Becca Sutton, the writer behind FirebirdFiction.com, which features two fantasy serials, one young adult, one paranormal, and we're going to talk about them in great detail in a second. Hi, Becca. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi. How are
you doing?
I'm all right.
I think you're our first English guest on the show, is that right? My first national.
As far as I know, I am. I've missed a few of the shows, so I haven't heard all of them, but none of the others I've heard have had an English guest on them.
Welcome to the fold. Right, I think since, Greg, it's your first time being a co-host, you're going to baptism by fire, you'll be the first to ask Becca a question for her interview. Go ahead.
All right. So what made you decide to start your site?
It was Anna's fault, among other people.
What?
I started talking to the web fiction people online, and then I thought, well, this is a good idea. So I started my site.
How dare you blame me? I'm innocent.
It's not a bad thing to be guilty of.
True. How long have you been? You've been...
It's just how long ago is it since I founded the site? Just over two years.
Word fiction running.
Yeah. I started posting the Dragon Wars saga at the beginning of January 2010. And it's still going.
Did you plan for it to be going this long, or is it one of those things that sort of happened?
No, I always knew it was going to be very long.
Yeah. And tell us a bit more about the Dragon War Saga. I mean, had you been writing that before that, and you decided to post it online, or?
The first 50,000 words or so of it were my 2006 NaNoWriMo. Obviously, much hit with the editing stick before it appeared on there, but the basic idea was my 2006 NaNoWriMo, which doesn't look anything like it did at that time, but that was where it basically started.
And so where did you get... So Dragon Wars is about three British teens, and they're dragged into another world and to fight against dragons. And, you know, that world has been fighting against dragons for a very long time, as far as I understand. Where did this idea come from? Is there any inspiration from, like, you know, the classics like Chronicles of Narnia, which has all that world hopping, or somewhere else?
Various places. It's one of those things that's featured in everything from, like you say, Narnia, all sorts of places. Just trying to think if there's any that's particular, but no, it was just sort of the story that arrived in my head that I wanted to tell. But no, I think it was probably, I've always been a big fan of fantasy. And that particular sort of fantasy in particular, so that probably explains it. Though, it's... Goodness me, I'm going all stammery, sorry. Narnia, but... Alan Garner's Elidor. I've just always been a big fan of fantasy, so.
And why did you, I don't know, I've always, at least when I was growing up, I always thought dragons were really cool. And in my stories, dragons were always the heroes. So kind of what made you think of them as, well, not necessarily the anti-heroes, but, you know, the ones to fight against?
That's a very difficult question. It's a very difficult question because I'm not sure how to answer it. And the reason I'm not sure how to answer it is because it would require spoilers for what's actually going on.
Yes. That's exactly the kind of question I'm hoping to ask. Come on, give us a spoiler.
It's something that anybody who's read right up to date has already known. The dragons aren't really the villains. Mm-hmm. Well, some of them are, but some of them are. There's a lot of misunderstandings going on in the story.
Those always make for good stories.
Yeah, a lot of misunderstandings. A lot of misunderstandings. It's like. The people in the other world don't generally like humans. They've got some very good reasons for not liking humans, but it's a bit annoying when you're trying to help them. That sort of thing. And there's a similar thing going on with the dragons. Not all the dragons are bad. There's some dragons we've met who are pretty good people. They're just like, my dragons are pretty much just like people, some of them are good, some of them are bad.
Yeah.
And when they're bad, they're very, very bad because they're very powerful. Yeah.
So are the dragons in your fiction? I'm sorry, I haven't familiarized myself with it ahead of time, but are the dragons in your fiction, are they magical, or are they just, you know, really powerful and strong and that kind of thing?
You could call it. They've got powers that might traditionally be called magical.
Okay.
But the characters, they don't tend to think of them as magic because they're just part of what they are.
Right. If you're living in a universe with magic, you just don't think of it as magic, right?
Yes. Yes. That's pretty much it.
it's an interesting point. You know, we have all of our scientific understanding of things. It's like, okay, it's magic to me. I mean, it's all right.
Well, just this afternoon, I was talking to the person who does my beta reading for me, and she was saying that having just sent me the part I posted just this evening, that she suddenly realised that the genre it seemed to be at the beginning, it's not at all. Because at the beginning, it seems to be sort of like a very traditional fantasy story. But by the point we've reached now, it's bordering on science fantasy.
So it's evolved over time.
It's not that it's evolved over time. I always intended it to do that. It's just that the story has recently gone back to Earth from the other world. And when you get back to Earth, when they get back to Earth, it's what's more about what's actually going on is being revealed. And it's not what it initially appears to be. I mean, I've known from the start what's going on, so...
you kind of have the first point of view on that.
Yeah, it's... I thought for a bit she was saying like there was a problem with it, but she was actually saying it was... It's been done so subtly that you just suddenly realise, wait a second, what's going on isn't what I thought was happening. So... I was quite pleased with that. Yeah.
So it just kind of flowed between the genres. So you don't, when you sit down to write it, you don't set out necessarily to fit it into a specific genre, right? You're just sitting down to tell a story.
Sitting down to tell a story, yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
But does the same apply to? I mean, you write another serial as well. Is it Haverton Chronicles?
Haverton. Yeah.
Sorry.
Not so much. Haverton's paranormal, and it is basically paranormal. It's just you know, your standard. I wouldn't say it's standard as in sort of cliche. At least I hope it's not cliche. But it's basically just a story about. It's got vampires and werewolves, and there's going to be ghosts and things. But it's basically is just what it says on the tin. It's supposed to be a paranormal serial, and it is. The Dragon Ball Saga, I've always said that it crosses subgenres in fantasy because of what's actually going on compared to what seems to be going on at first. Because it could have just been a sort of high fantasy sword and sorcery adventure, but... that was never what was happening in my head. The story was always a lot more complicated than that. Because it's got history for the going back sort of thousands of years, and everything that's happening started thousands of years ago, and it's only just coming out what actually started it. Mm-hmm. This arc is going to reveal a lot of what's going on. But the Haverton Chronicles, it's just paranormal stories that they're all going to fit quite neatly into the paranormal genre, I think. I mean, they're not paranormal romances. They're more sort of, what's the word?
Unexpected?
Well, no, they're not, I hesitate to call them thrillers as well, because paranormal thrillers tend to be more horror thing. But
maybe not as grand.
Urban fantasy, perhaps, is the word, but I tend to think of that as being more like the Dresden Chronicles, Dresden Files, sorry, which is not exactly. It's, well,
I guess people Haverton, have to give it a read.
Yeah, Haverton's about this guy whose sister was killed by a vampire, and he's joined a secret organization of vampire hunters. Mm-hmm. And it's it starts when he has a fairly disastrous hunt, and goes from there. So it's, you know, it's like a fairly standard start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot more standard than Dragon Wars, though hopefully, you know, not cliche.
But, so I'm a big fan of monsters, if I can just jump in here for a second. Yeah. What are your vampires like? Like, what you kind of describe your dragons as being a little bit non-traditional, a little bit more mysterious, enigmatic. What are your vampires like?
My vampires are, well, I've taken aspects of folklore and aspects of various sorts of fictional vampires and put them together. I tend to write characters as being people. So, again, there's varying sorts of vampires. There's some really, really bad ones. The antagonist is a really nasty piece of work, but there's also others who are.
Do any of them sparkle?
No, not unless they're wearing body glitter. Also, but they don't burn up in the sun though, because that was something that started with Hollywood. Instead, they have trouble staying awake during the day. So if they go out in daylight and they haven't got a very strong will, they tend to just pass out.
Can they pass for regular humans? Do they have any sort of like appearance, or can they just put on a suit and walk the streets?
They can pass for human when they're fed. If they're hungry, they look a bit odd because they go all pale and drawn. But when they're well fed, they a lot like, if you think about Dracula, he could pass for human. And he could go out during the day. People always forget that. In the novel, he could pass for human. He could go out during the day.
Right, he goes out and has a promenade.
Does that mean that your vampires, can they not cross water then?
I've actually thought about that one. They probably need a bridge to do it. I think they would have trouble with it, actually. Because I do tend to use it actually varies also. There's different like families of vampires, because vampire families get started when somebody who hasn't been turned by another vampire but doesn't want to die has got enough strength of will that they don't die, they turn into a vampire. But what they believe about vampires when they die affects what weaknesses they've got. So, somebody who started a bloodline these days probably would burn up in the sun because that's what they'd believe about vampires. But somebody.
So the vampires kind of dig their own grave.
If they're not careful, it's like somebody who's well informed about vampires will have very few weaknesses, because there are some things that damage all vampires. Rowan or hawthorn wood, garlic, though how that works is it's mainly the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not the bulb, the classic piece of garlic that we think of.
The bulb does have an effect, but it's like if somebody's eaten a lot of garlic, they can't feed on them because it ruins the taste of their blood. The raw garlic raises blisters, and they don't especially like the smell of raw garlic. I'm trying to think, what other weaknesses do they all have? Oh, yes, they have to be invited in, though there is an exception to that, which is established pretty early on, which is if they've already tasted the blood of somebody, then they don't need to be invited into anywhere where they are.
And they can freely attack their friend. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
How about in terms of religion? I mean, are your vampires religious, scared of the cross, or is it kind of like, haha, you know, is it, what is it in Twilight? He just goes like, that's just geometry and funny shapes. And then he sparks stuff. So are your vampires afraid of God?
There is something with, there is something going on with them and what might be called holy objects, but it's not entirely clear at this point what it is. Because the antagonist, he definitely has a problem with holy objects. At one point, it hasn't happened yet, but at one point he gets clubbed in the face with a crucifix and gets a really nasty burn from it. But there's another of the vampires who doesn't seem to have a problem with it at all. But she has a problem with some other religions. Other religions she might have a problem with. So it doesn't seem to have anything to do with their beliefs or the beliefs of the person waving the stuff at them. It's almost as if it's what the god of that particular religion thinks of that particular vampire. It's a bit hard to explain. It's like Lisa doesn't seem to have any problems early on with Christian religion religious paraphernalia, but there's a scene coming up where I'm trying to remember the details because it's one of those I've still got to work over. But she runs into trouble with something else, whereas the antagonist he runs into a lot of trouble with very very standard stuff.
Mm-hmm. But. It seems like there's a lot of it sounds like there's a subset of things that influence all vampires are dangerous to all vampires, and then there's another set of things that kind of is specific to that vampire, like you were saying when they die. Is that correct?
They're specific to a vampire if they're the first of their bloodline, but mm-hmm. other vampires who are turned normally just get the weaknesses that they're. Sort of the original founder of the line thought were there. So it's like what they think affects every vampire that's descended from them.
It establishes some kind of like genetic code almost.
That's actually quite an interesting idea. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But complicated, hard to keep track of.
Yeah. It's something that only it's only dealt with him passing in the story because it's not that important to the story, except that they know the hunters know, for example, that there are some vampires and you can stake them with anything and they'll die, but there are others you need a Rowanwood stake for, and there's no way to tell.
Yeah.
So there's no way to tell. So they always carry Rowan or Hawthorne stakes because it's the only way you can be sure of it.
So I have a question. I'm thinking about it from the point of view of, say, I was hunting a vampire. Would I have to have, like, a little wagon full of all sorts of different things?
Because yes.
What kind of vampire I would be fighting?
Yeah, it's one of the problems the main character has is he's got to stop, because he's going to get in a lot of trouble if anybody catches him with carrying that sort of stuff around, because most people don't believe in vampires. So they'll be thinking... the best he might end up committed, at the worst he might end up being charged with attempted murder or murder.
So did you mention that there were werewolves as well?
Yeah, there were werewolves.
So like that you have the silver bullet problem, right? You have to carry around a gun with a silver bullet in it, and then you get stopped by a cop. There's werewolves.
My werewolves are very sensitive to silver. Very sensitive to silver indeed. They get anaphylactic shock from very minor silver scratches. It's
so if we're fighting me, silver ring on, they'd get like dermatitis.
No, a silver scratch can kill them. I mean, they'd have developed sort of treatments for this. If they know they're in danger of encountering silver, they can avoid it, though the medicines will make them very ill. It'll make them feel ill, but and even then, enough silver damage will kill them. But if they're not expecting it, and they're not taking these sort of drugs that will protect them, then they're going to run into serious trouble pretty quickly. I think, Anna, you might have a couple of years ago read one of the short stories that set in the same universe.
I might have done. I got through quite a bit of Dragon Wars, and then I read some of them, and then I've just kind of been horrible and not read anything.
Yeah. Yes. No, I think this was before I actually started posting online. I was looking for some people to read the story. It's set in the same universe. The story about Sarah, be going up on the site at some point.
There's a scene with her in the treehouse, and she's going to kill herself or something.
Yes, yes.
Aha! Did I just spoil the story?
No. That's the very start.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I remember reading that.
Yeah. It needs a bit more work, but it's set in the same universe. It's actually set a couple of years before the part of the story I'm posting now, but it actually contains spoilers for part of the story.
So which do you prefer writing between your two serials?
Oh, I love them both. I just love writing. It's I've been writing since I was about 8 years old. So,
and you update when it was you update quite a lot as well, don't you? Because I think you've got what's your update schedule again?
The update schedule for the Dragon Wars saga is the main story updates on Monday and Friday. The side story goes up on a Wednesday. The side stories go up on a Wednesday. And then Haymonton updates every Tuesday. In theory, it's a donate to accelerate story, which means that if people donate, there's extra updates triggered on Thursdays and Saturdays. But it doesn't have enough readers to attract many donations yet, so because it's quite a new story and I'm still trying to plug it. But so at the moment it's just updating on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. What was I going to say? I'm actually currently recording and putting up the Dragon Wars saga in audio version, providing Dropbox don't go and stop file sharing anyway as a result of this mega upload thing. But I've been doing that, and that's going up on Sundays and Thursdays. I just keep adding stuff. Yes, and yes, I just write a lot, so it's.
Have you ever missed an update?
No, not on the main stories. I did have a hiatus on the side stories for Dragon Wars last November during NaNoWriMo, but that was pre-planned. I announced that in advance, so I don't think that counts. But no, I've never missed an update on the main story. Not even when I had flu at New Year 2011.
Terrible.
I was full-blown flu. I was in bed and I crawled out of bed to do an update.
That's dedication.
God, you're a better woman than I.
That's insanity.
So do you have like, do you prepare a couple in advance, and like if you know you're not going to be available to do an update, do you have like three in the bag ahead of time, or do you just write by the seat of your pants?
Sometimes I'm writing by the seat of my pants, but I do try to have some buffer in place. Because it's just more comfortable. You don't know what's going to happen. At the moment, I've got... last NaNoWriMo, I wrote a good chunk of the current arc. So I'm coming up on running out of buffer because there's a point where towards the end of November, I started writing the climax, even though I hadn't got there yet of this arc. So... I'll have to start filling in the gaps again soon, but no, I try to have some in reserve because it's I do write the side stories by the seat of my pants though.
Do you prefer writing them that way? Like, do you get energized by writing them like right before they need to go up?
It's just I don't have to, with writing all the other stuff, I don't have time to time to build up a buffer on them yet. No. I don't mind writing by the seat of my pants, but at the same time, I don't mind having a buffer either. It's just, you know, I prefer to have a couple of parts of buffer. It's just a matter of, you have to have the time because I do work full time as well, so.
I find when I have a buffer, then I get lazy. And then I had like a 3-week buffer on Above Ground. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I've got loads of time. And then just today I realized I'm supposed to put up a new chapter. And so I had to write it all from scratch, like literally counting down the minutes until this phone call, going like, no, get the chapter done.
Oh, dear. No,
but I finished.
I do try to get it. I have to get it done a couple of days in advance because it has to go to Inventrix to attack with commas. Because my punctuation is less than stellar.
So. Well, I'll edit it later, I've decided. I don't have time. Greg, anything else? Or Becca? Greg, any other questions for Becca? Becca, anything else you wanted to say before we have a quick break? Or
I think I'm set for now. I appreciate all the discussion about monsters because those are my favorite parts.
Yeah, I like monsters as well.
I hope so.
They're so interesting.
Well, you should meet Greg in person, you know, because never mind. I'm not going to. Right. Yeah. So let's just stop here for a second and have a quick break for a reading. When we come back, we'll be chatting more about restarting your dead serial, and Becca can give us advice on how to keep your motivation, keep writing. But for now, here's a story for your listening pleasure.
Shadow, by Chris George. Read by Jason Strasberg. Episode 1. From Dusk Till Dawn. It was midnight. Colored light danced across a damp street strewn with litter, and a fine mist of rain drifted down almost imperceptibly to drench the unwary. A group of girls wearing deceptively little staggered and clamored between nightclubs, shrieking and cackling as they did so. One of them paused briefly before a dark archway, uttered a slurred stream of consonants supposed to convey something along the lines of, "What are you looking at?" and then continued tottering along the street after her friends. The mist of rain thinned, then stopped. A young man emerged from beneath the archway, holding his hand out, palms up before shrugging and making his way up the street. His boots sounded heavy on the damp cobbles, and there was a sound of a chain clinking off his belt as he walked. The laughing, shouting, screaming, singing voices of drunken students echoed off the walls of the winding, rising street, and each group of guys or girls gave him suspicious looks as they passed. Their laughter was always louder after they rounded the next bend. He swallowed as he reached the top of the hill. Here the lights were brightest, the colors the most exotic, and the music the most appealing. The facade of Dusk stood out among its gray neighbors, and the lights and the sounds drifted out from within like the scent of a flower, promising nectar. He stared at it silently, absorbing its atmosphere, and wished he were there under better circumstances. She was standing in the doorway. She caught his gaze with her own. Her eyes were like dark, sullen hooks. They caught the light and shimmered, so that even from across the street, they seemed to stand out from all other things. He attempted a weak smile, gave up, and walked over to her. "I was wondering when you'd show up," she said. There was no attempt to conceal anger in her tone. I've been getting soaked here waiting for you. Water dripped from the ends of matter strands of her hair just to emphasize the point. I'm sorry, he lied. I was taking shelter from it myself. That was a half-truth. On another night, he would have braved the rain like everyone else, hoping to have a good time. But on this occasion, he found himself seeking refuge for other reasons. Well, that's great, isn't it? She continued. Just like you, always thinking about yourself over others. I said I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I'll just file that away with all the other worthless things you've told me then, shall I? Whatever. Can we go inside? She shrugged and gestured to the doorway. By all means. Inside, the music was loud and it was live, a comforting barrier between his mind and the cold silence of reality. She led him through to a relatively quiet corner near the back, squeezed in behind a table, and waited for him to sit. They stared at each other without speaking for a couple of minutes as the music washed over them. The lyrics seemed bitterly ironic, and he couldn't quite meet her gaze as a smile twitched to the corners of her mouth. "You wanted to talk?" he said at last. She let out a sigh that was inaudible due to the music, but her expression said all it needed to. "Yes, of course I want to talk. I've always wanted to talk properly for over a year, but that's never what happens. You just stare at me like you are right now, and I don't know a single thing that's going on in that gloomy little head of yours. I'm sorry." He wanted to say that he wasn't very good at expressing himself, that he had been trying to explain how he felt for as long as she had been trying to talk it out. But of course, the words wouldn't come, and so he just sat there, trailing off into the opening riff of the next song. Her eyes started to shimmer all the more. You what? Tell me, Ellis. Just tell me something. How do you feel? What do you want out of this relationship? Do you care about me at all? Just who the hell are you? There was an answer to every question somewhere. He caught a hint of them in the opening line of the chorus, in the rhythm of the drums, the whine of the guitar, but he couldn't find his own way of saying them. Sarah, I... The vowel stretched out and died. The tears which had been building in her eyes finally spilled over, but he could do nothing but watch her, powerless to stop the inevitable flow of events. She stood up. You're pathetic. You know that? You've got everyone scared or caught up in this great everlasting mystery that is Ellis Graves, but it's all just a smokescreen behind the fact that there is no mystery. You're just a soulless doll, aren't you? For a year and a half I've been trying to find the substance I thought I was in love with, but there's nothing there at all. She slid out from the chair and started to walk away. The last thing he heard her say before her voice and her footsteps were swept away by the music was, "Don't bother calling." He stayed until the night wore thin. One song bled into another, and then another. An amber-colored drink somehow never turned into a warning red. Everything blurred and blended, losing all character, and his table at the back became more and more isolated. He didn't wait to be thrown out, but left before the last song, drifting out into a night that longed only to become morning. The streets were almost empty. Only a few hardcore drunks and vagrants wandered them now, ducking into alleys to vomit or to pass out, or just lie low until daylight. Ellis knew his way home instinctively, and he wasn't so drunk to have forgotten. But he was in no mood to return to bed. He knew that when he did, he would sleep like a dead man and drown himself in gloom and music when he awoke. But for now, he just wanted to wander, to find somewhere new. He followed the hill down towards the river, choosing the road less traveled through older streets and alleys, descending tunnels of steps and cutting beneath overhanging restaurant kitchens, past the back doors of nightclubs. The air was filled with the scent of garbage and cooling vomit, but the smell of the river drifted up on the breeze, and so he followed his nose as much as anything else. One street became another, and each corner revealed a new route to take. Above him, between the dark slate rooftops and rusty guttering, the sky began to change color, from purple-orange to pale gray, but the hill continued downwards, and the river still seemed a long way off. Then Ellis passed an alleyway and caught something out of the corner of his eye. Something that had been glittering in the shadows. He stopped, walked back a few paces, and turned to face the dead-end street. It was gloomier than most, overshadowed as it was by three rooftops fighting for space and filled, mostly with cardboard boxes, which were in turn filled with foul-smelling rubbish. It was not the kind of alley which invited one to enter into it. Ellis blinked, trying to find whatever it had been that had caught his attention, but all he could see was the gloomy rubbish tip and the paint peeling away from a series of padlocked doors. He sighed, began to move on again, and then almost instantly jerked his head around. It had been there. Whatever the glittering thing had been, he had seen it again, just as he looked away. And it wasn't just interesting because it was shiny, or because he couldn't seem to see it when he looked down the alley straight on. There was something unusual about the object itself. In the two brief glimpses he had caught of it, there had been more than a mere glimmer. There had been an unusual color, and a sense of something beyond them. He felt an overwhelming desire to find out what. Carefully turning his head this way and that, he tried to see if he could find the point where the glittering object could be seen. It was difficult, but with a little effort he found he could just make it out in the corner of his eye if he didn't actually try to look at it. He had never been good at physics, but he was pretty certain that there was no theory of light that involved it being able to tell when you were looking at it. He tried to think of a few of his own, even wondering if it might be a rat trapped in a piece of an old drinks can. But none of them really made sense. The only way to know for sure what it was to get closer to it. Slowly, still looking away and trying not to look too hard, he edged into the alleyway, scanning back and forth for the source of the shine. Every now and then he would catch sight of it and be able to move a little closer before it vanished again. He might have worried that he would look stupid walking into an alley in such a fashion, like a paranoid crab, but he was too intrigued by the reflection to care, or even to think about how he must appear to anyone not in on his bizarre little secret. Closer and closer he got to the object, and still it managed to be out of his reach, and then suddenly, the world was tearing and he was tearing with it. Whirlpools of nausea seemed to explode open inside his skull, and it seemed almost like he was tumbling off into infinity, and he tripped and landed in a pile of garbage. He picked himself up, cursing as he did so, and looked around him for the source of the reflection. To his surprise, he found that there was a small silver ring at his feet. He bent down to pick it up, and then examined it in the thin sliver of light that came from down between the rooftops. It was quite dull, having not been looked after very well by its previous owner. In the center was a single purple stone, less than half the thickness of the ring itself, and set into the metal, its top flush with the finish of the silver. It wasn't unattractive, but hardly worth wasting his time over. He slipped it onto his finger in an effort to make the embarrassment seem a little more worthwhile, then made his way back out of the alley, dusting rubbish off his clothes as he did so. It wasn't until he rounded the next corner that he realized something was wrong. The sky, he realized with a jolt of shock, was a faint shade of green swirled with purple, and it wasn't a river he could see at the bottom of the hill, but a slick black ocean. Even so, these details seemed trifles when compared with what faced him just a few meters further down the cobbled slope. Grinning at him with a mouth filled with teeth like rusty axe blades and eyes which were literally aflame. Ellis had never seen a monster before, not a real one, but he was pretty sure that the traditional course of action under such circumstances was to run, so he ran. Thank you.
That was The Tree, off the album So, by Clippa, found at lapfoxtracks.com.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at WebFiction Radio. Email us at webfictionworld@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Greg, do you want to kick things off?
No.
All right.
This is my first go. You're just throwing me in there.
That's the point. Anyway, well, we're back. We're back to recording. So let's talk about, you know, dead web fiction, how to, you know, why people abandon them, how to get back in writing. And maybe the best place to start is at the beginning. So, like, why do people burn out? Why do they stop writing? I actually had a long pause in writing Above Ground. And I think the main reason was because I looked at the first few chapters and I was about three quarters of the way through the novel and I realized that they sucked. And then I felt really depressed for quite a while and just stopped writing. But I'm sure I'm not alone in this. But Greg, have you ever felt that way about your writing, or do you know other reasons why people stop writing their serials?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I took and have taken and occasionally continue to take breaks on the Guide to Moral Living examples, and that's a little different because that's not one serialized story. It's a lot of different short stories that are for the most part disconnected, except they're all really nuts. But when I first started with that, it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday, strict schedule. I wrote on my commute to work every morning. I wrote on my commute back home every evening, and then finished up and polished it up and posted online. And actually, the reason that really threw me for a loop out of that routine is once I started working from home, I didn't have that commute time. And so that commute time got eaten up by, I don't even know what. If I had been able to identify it, I would not have fallen out of the rhythm. But that made it really difficult to do. With my novel Codex, I didn't really have that problem just because I had written a lot of it already. So except for a couple points where I had to write like 4 weeks worth all at once in order to get myself that thing back, by a couple stories in the bag. It's really for me just about time. Like if I can set time aside out of all the other stuff I do to do it, I will. But if I can't be organized, I'm just dead in the water.
What about you, Becca? Do you have any ideas why people burn out? Like what reasons they stop writing?
I think sometimes it's it's like writer's block, isn't it? Sometimes it's because the story's not working. And once you realise it's not working, you sort of grind to a halt. Or they just run out of ideas, because it can be, it can be a bit hard to keep up momentum sometimes. And if you do let it slip, I mean, one of the reasons I've never missed an update, even when I had flu, is I know if I miss an update, I'll miss another one and another one and another one, because that's the sort of person I am. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to make a habit, but once a good habit, but once a break, it tends to stay broken. So
that's actually a really good quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've noticed myself too. If I actually get it into a rhythm, into a habit, I can do it, but I cannot break the habit at all because then it just kind of slips aside. Now, I was wondering, since I have the two of you on the recording here, what about lack of interest? Like, have either of you experienced something where you're midway through a story and you just it feels like it's working okay and the characters are doing what you need them to do, but you just get really bored with it? Has that ever happened?
I think that happened actually when I was writing. Because I finished Above Ground and then I started writing the sequel Between Worlds. And the more I thought about everything that was wrong with Above Ground and all these plot holes and things I need to fix, the less I was interested in writing Between Worlds, because I was like, what's the point in writing? I just kept thinking, what's the point in writing this when there's so much I still need to fix, and there's so many things that when I do the edits for the first book, we'll have to change in this book, so it's just a waste of time. And I just got to the point that I ended up, I mean, I took everything down and I've just been starting from scratch again, which is probably the most dramatic thing anyone could ever do. And not recommended, because you do piss off your readership, since they're like, I read this shit already. Like, okay, it's slightly better than last time, but... But, yeah, I lost interest, and I figured, you know, I'm the one who should... If I'm not interested, like, who else is going to be interested in reading it? So... Yeah.
That's one of the other reasons I like to keep up a little bit of buffer. If I do get bored with writing it, then I can take a couple of weeks off and write something else. So it helps, having a bit of buffer helps stop you burning out.
But I don't think that's specific to web fiction either. I mean, there's
no.
I've read books before where you'll be reading and about halfway through, just like the story takes a left turn and goes somewhere completely different. And oftentimes it's fine. Like it fits in the plot and everything, but you almost get the sense that that author was sitting there, you know, 6 months into writing this thing. And they just said, screw it. I'm tired of writing this one plot. I'm going to write a second one, graft it on however I need to. And off we go. And I think that actually produces some exciting things too, because as a reader, you have your expectations, and part of your expectations are built on what the author expects the reader is going to respond to.
Mm. So how do we avoid this then? How do you avoid burnout? I mean, we've mentioned having a buffer. What other? I mean, Becca, you've never missed an update. What other?
Please help us.
Well, it's just a matter of I get home from work, and one of the first things I do on an update day is update the site. It is a habit I've got into. So it is just a matter of sort of it being something you do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the writing, but updating the site is a little bit of a chore, so...
They say with writers... Since we're such good procrastinators, half of the job is just getting your butt in the chair.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. That's the other reason that I like having a deadline. It means that if I haven't written something and the deadline's coming up, I've got to write it. So.
That's actually what drew me to web fiction in the first place, because I'm sure, like everybody else in the world, I had like 3 half-finished novels in my drawer and things like that. And I was like, what's the best way to force me to do this? Peer pressure. If I have an obligation to somebody else, I'm going to feel real guilty if I don't, if I don't fill that. So that's how I got started. I was like, I just need to set a schedule for myself, get like 2 readers, just those 2 readers, I will not disappoint, and then go for it. 1 reader, screw him, but 2 readers, geez, that's a big time.
I was the same as well, actually, because I had written a couple other novels, and then I'd started Above Ground, and then I just thought to myself, this book will never be commercially published because the genre is a bit left field, and the only way to get this written is if I set myself a schedule, do it online. And then it got to the point that because I love deadlines, I can really work to a deadline, so I would get over the whole, this chapter is rubbish and the writing is crap, and I'd be like, I have to meet the deadline, and that actually got the first draft out. And if anyone has trouble like getting the writing out there, I'd really recommend web fiction because it worked for me.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's actually, I'm experiencing that at the present time with my new alternate history science fiction book, where I decided I'm gonna try to prepare out 6 months of research time. And I'm going to do my research, go to the library, gather my thoughts, and then start writing it once I have the theme set. That was about probably 12 months ago that I decided to do that. And part of it was because I didn't just start writing it and posting it and forcing myself to research along with it.
Is this the one we discussed in New York?
Yes.
You're still not writing it?
Well, no, I am now. It just hasn't been posted. And then with Freedom Beer that's coming up, that has to take priority, because otherwise The Penguin's going to get me.
Yeah. I'll get you as well. All right. So, one of the things I mentioned how when I got stuck on above ground, then in the end, I just ended up taking it all down and starting again from scratch. And I know that another author who I know who's burnt out on his fiction, Chris Poirier, he wrote Winter Rain, which is actually a really good werewolf story, but then lost interest, you know, and it wrote himself into a corner and has never continued it despite me bullying him. He's also said he's thinking of taking it down, starting from scratch. But when is it worth taking it down and starting from scratch as opposed to just trying to keep plugging away at the story? I mean, for me, it was just, I like drastic solutions, but I don't know, how can you tell when that's the right step to take? Do you guys have any advice?
I suppose if you really have written yourself into a corner and you've written yourself into a corner and the plot's not going to go forward from there, then you really do have to at least go back to before the problem started and quite possibly back to the beginning.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say never. I actually think that some of my best stuff was produced because I had written myself into a corner and I had to get really, 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 really clever to try to get my way out. But my readers might have a different opinion of that. So.
Was it clever or insane?
Right. Oh, he had a jet ski the whole time. It's totally fine.
Oh, yes. His wings were just hidden in that briefcase.
Exactly.
It was cool.
He's out and screwed him on. He's fine. But to me, it's almost kind of like poetic forms, right? You have a form that you try to write poetry into, and it's through the limitations that you have to be creative to work within those limitations and work with those expectations of the form. And for me, writing is kind of prose fiction is kind of a more dynamic version of that. In that, you've written yourself into a corner, but that's the limitation that's analogous to the poetry limit. And you need to figure out a way to do what you want to do within that limit.
Mm-hmm. That was very insightful of you.
I know. I try to do that about once a year.
Does this count for last year's, since you kind of missed out last year on being insightful? Or?
Of course, you have to bring that up.
Right. So I'm trying to recap all the stuff we've discussed into a list, because I like lists. So I was thinking how to avoid not getting into this situation in the first place, how to avoid abandoning your serial. And so we've said, have a buffer. Becca said that. Get your butt in the chair, have the habit of writing, which was also Becca's sage advice. Work to deadlines. What else is there?
It's pretty comprehensive.
I think it depends on if you're like a pantser or a plotter, but for me, I like having an outline of the next few chapters so that I don't write myself into a corner. But if you're Greg, you can just have the man with the briefcase.
Wait, did you just say a pantser versus plotter?
Yeah.
That was very clever. I really like that. I'm writing that one right down. Pantser or plotter? Wow.
Have you never heard that before? I thought that was common. Becca, back me up here.
It is quite a common one, pantser and plotter, isn't it? Though I seem to be somewhere in between. Sometimes I seem to be writing by the seat of my pants. I don't really. I sometimes have stuff written down, but most of it's just in my head.
When I start writing a story, I generally always have the ending written. I think I always start by the end. And so then when I'm writing at the beginning, I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
If the middle bit isn't planned, sure. That helps me avoid getting stuck.
I tend to plan the end of the individual arcs, but when I was doing this current arc for Nano, towards the end, I started writing the climax instead of a book away from writing it linearly and started writing the climax. And it is much the same thing. I like to know where it's going.
So I guess I have a question for you two then. So is it still possible, even if you have an outline, to write yourself into a corner?
Depends how good your outline is.
Oh.
It's possible if there's some flaw in your outline and you don't notice it until I think I've done it before now. Not with either the stories that are going up online, but with other things I've been writing, I've had an outline and I've managed to get to a point and then think, you know, this doesn't actually work when you start writing it out.
Oh dear.
As opposed to just having it as this happens, and then you're like, this makes no sense when you're writing it.
It's happened to me as well. But now I have a newfangled outline Excel sheet format where it's the chapter number, then I have a column just for like the time of day it is, in case I'm jumping around in time, then another column for what point of view it is, then like the main events for that character, like all the different, each storyline within the story, each plot thread has its own column, so I can keep notes. And
I've
become pretty anal about it.
I think that was after you proofread Codex and you discovered that one guy was teleporting around the room.
Well, when I was editing Codex, I was like, Greg, this chapter, why do you have it here? It needs to go.
Right.
I think she made
me just throw stuff away. I felt so sad, my babies.
Yeah. Right. I don't know whether it's the late hour, but I've run out of advice. Do either of you two have any more pearls of wisdom?
No.
Silence is ominous.
Ominous silence.
Same thing. It's quite late, isn't it?
Right. Well, I guess we'll wrap up the show there. So I think we've said everything that needs to be said. Thank you, Becca, for joining us today and sharing your thoughts with us. It's been a pleasure getting to know about your fantasy serials and hearing all your sage wisdom.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Greg, what are we going to talk about next time?
You're making me think on my feet?
Yep.
Let's talk about monsters. Let's have an entire show devoted to monsters. Monsters, aliens, you name it.
Okay, right. So the next show is about Greg. If you have any ideas or suggestions for podcast, please don't hesitate to drop us a line at webfictionworld@gmail.com. We'll also happily promote any milestones. So if you've reached the 100th episode or 1,000th episode of your story, or you finally finished writing the damn thing, just drop us a line and we can give you a shout out. That's it for now. Thanks again to our guests and everyone tuning in. My name is Anna Hart. I'm here with Greg X. Graves, and you've been listening to Web Fiction World. Until our next show, keep reading, keep typing.